Welcome. Let me set the scene for you. It is a hot day in the tropics of Costa Rica's rainforest. We are high up in the treetops, surrounded by lush greenery. Sounds of monkeys and exotic birds are heard all around us. At this moment, our team of five is experiencing sensations of excitement, fear, and anticipation as we gear up for a crazy family adventure. My 80-year-old father and my 78-year-old mother are adjusting their helmets and body harnesses. My husband and I are helping our 9-year-old daughter set up with her gear. Whether due to a moment of inspiration or a lapse in judgment, we thought it would be great fun for us to go ziplining together. Here's a family photo of us posed right before takeoff. This is the general height of the ascent from the stable platform into the free-form sensation of air and movement. For safety reasons, of course, our guide offered us specific instructions before embarking on an adventure such as this. He told us to hold on to the zipline cord, lean back, and bend our knees. When we near the end of the line, he said to pull on the cord to slow down the pace. His final words were these: smile the whole time. We'll be taking photos. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm about to launch my body into a novel situation that defies the laws of gravity, I find it hard to hold on to the instructions at hand. So I devised a plan. I focus on the guide's first and last points: smile and hold on. I figured the rest would sort itself out. On my first try, I held on a bit too tight and lost my momentum. One of the guides had to come rescue me in mid-flight. I looked like this. I made a mental note to myself: next time, relax and loosen my grip, which I did. But this time I forgot to pull down on the cord when I reached the end. I smiled with my body moving full steam ahead. I was feeling pretty good about myself, but I noticed that the guides were not smiling back. No affirming signals of a thumbs up, good job, you got this. Instead, I saw their faces cringe. They covered their eyes to avert the look of impending disaster. When I realized that I might very well smash my face into the approaching tree, my expression changed from a smile to sheer horror. I looked like this. I eventually got the hang of it. Near the end of my zipline adventure, I looked something like this. Sometimes our bodies offer us insights that our minds don't always register. For example, I noticed how refreshing the breeze felt on my face as the zip line transported me from one platform to the next. My eyes delighted in the magical sun-dappled movement of light dancing on the leaves from my treetop vantage point. I wondered, when was the last time that I felt truly embodied, fully present to the moment, experiencing the sacred in everyday living? It occurred to me, in a bittersweet way, that ziplining is the perfect metaphor for American culture. So often we are busy transporting our bodies to future destinations rather than inhabiting our bodies. We want to zipline our way through life with speed, adrenaline, and excitement. Social media provides an online platform to reinforce lives filled with exhilaration. Don't get me wrong, everyone deserves some fun, and it's fine to share our photos with family and friends. However, given our opioid epidemic and other body-numbing practices, it seems that our culture is more comfortable in checking out rather than checking in with our bodies. What if we were to switch this around and be a bit counterculture? What might an embodied life look and feel like? In particular, how might we connect our bodies with spiritual practices that keep us grounded and present, mindful to the moment, experiencing the sacred in everyday living? I decided to engage these theological questions of embodiment through a visual perspective. I came across a captivating, inspiring book by John Sweeney called Praying with Our Hands, 21 Practices of Embodied Prayer from the World's Spiritual Traditions. Photographer Jennifer Wilson beautifully captured these embodied prayer poses through her stunning black and white images. These images evoked in me the values I longed for: trust, surrender, and letting go. I would now like to highlight some of these spiritual practices from this book. Welcoming the Sabbath. Jews celebrate the coming of the Sabbath at home on Friday evenings, marking it as the beginning of a holy day, a remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt, and a reminder of the work of creation. The Sabbath is welcomed by lighting Sabbath candles. God's first act of creation was when God said, "Let there be light." Shabbat reminds us of our role in the ongoing work of creation as we release the light of God infused in all things through our own efforts to repair the world. The Jewish expression of service is also known as Tikkun Olam. Welcoming the deity. Namaste is a Hindu greeting which is often used in yoga practice. This particular hand posture is known as Anjali Mudra, meaning welcome the deity. It represents the spark of the divine within each of us. The divine in me honors the divine in you. Yogis teach that when we direct our gaze inwards, we commune with this sacred presence. Practicing yoga is all about surrender and letting go, allowing the body to find its center. Praying with icons. Worship spaces usually have special spiritual significance because of the symbols of the divine present there. In Hindu temples, incense symbolizes divine manifestation. In Roman Catholic churches, the presence of the Holy Eucharist is the presence of God. In synagogues, the Torah scroll instills special reverence. Venerating them by praying with icons brings the body into the act of prayer. Dancing with God. The mystical movements of Hinduism, Hasidism, and Sufism teach us that union with God is not only possible, but also natural to our human condition. In Sufi dance or turning, the dervish becomes a doorway through which the divine and human meet. Receiving energy from God with the right hand turned toward heaven, she returns energy to the earth with her left hand. Breaking bread. All things contain a shard of God's goodness, which is why sustenance for the body can also be nourishment for the soul. The stages for making bread are often metaphors for steps on the spiritual path: planting, sowing, harvesting, kneading, rising, and sharing. Common to all religious traditions is the idea of hospitality, in welcoming the stranger at our table. By preparing our hearts, we will be able to respond with our hands to the needs we see around us, sharing God's goodness in simple ways. Daily honor. Many religious traditions practice a daily regimen of repeated prayer, but none combine the spiritual with the physical like Salat, Muslim daily prayer. According to tradition, the prayer was first taught to the Prophet Muhammad by angels, and it mirrors their constant adoration to God. Salat is practiced all over the globe. Five times daily, the Islamic world faces Mecca and praises in the name of Allah, boundlessly merciful and compassionate. The prayer has several stages and universes of meaning: standing, bowing, prostrating, and kneeling all use hands to recognize and praise Allah, God in Arabic, in humility and devotion. Showing compassion. Central to Buddhist spiritual practice is service to others. Bodhisattvas, Sanskrit for awakening being, are people who set aside their own striving toward enlightenment in order to help other people reach their enlightenment. You don't have to be a bodhisattva you don't have to be schooled in the Dharma, Buddhist teachings, to be a bodhisattva. Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Rachel Carson, and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. are a few modern examples often cited. All of these paths show how we gain wisdom and compassion through selflessness when our hands act in perfect understanding that you are me and that we are one. And finally, holy water. Most religious traditions use washing in water as a personal means of preparing ceremonially for prayer, meditation, or spiritual service. One of these beautiful prayer practices is the Hindus' devotion to Ganga, the goddess of the Ganges, India's most sacred river. In Catholic tradition, water is sanctified by a priest and used for personal and community worship, sometimes sprinkled on the worshipers or simply touched upon entering a sacred place. Sometimes a touch can help to restore our spiritual focus. When I undertook this visual exploration of world religions in response to my Costa Rica ziplining experience, I wasn't sure what I might find. At first glance, it seemed as though my zipline experience simply represented an isolated incident of a vacation getaway. What happens in Costa Rica stays in Costa Rica. However, that initial perception did not hold true at all. Funny how that works. Something happens in our lives that highlights a moment in time. In my case, a tight grip, a startled look on my face. Upon further reflection, I discovered that this moment reveals a deeper pattern, habit, and way of being that had been there all along. I just didn't have the eyes to see it or an embodied awareness to realize it until now. Why now? For me, it comes down to the practice of embodied meditation and prayer. Each of these diverse meditation poses share a common theme. They all embody the three principles of trust, surrender, and letting go. Let me personalize these principles for greater clarity. At age 6, I survived a traumatic, life-threatening brain hemorrhage. This, followed by 2 more relapses at ages 16 and 25. The more health setbacks I experienced, the more I feared my mortality. I no longer trusted my body as a safe, reliable place to inhabit. My fear and lack of trust caused me to cultivate a tight grip on life. This tight grip, in turn, prevented me from surrendering and letting go. I ziplined my way through life, trying to chase, outrace these uncomfortable human emotions through constant striving. I bicycled 5,200 miles across the United States from Bellingham, Washington, to Portland, Maine, with a touring organization called Cycle America. I taught English to immigrants and refugees at the International Institute of Boston with Sidier AmeriCorps. I backpacked for a month in the remote backcountry of Alaska with National Outdoor Leadership School, a wilderness survival program. My action-oriented, achievement-driven path had taken me far in life, but it had not offered me peace. I wondered, could there be another, more sustainable way to approach life that offered greater peace and soul nourishment? If so, what might that look and feel like? Is it possible to embrace my mortality without associating it with fear? Could I view my body with greater compassion as a living, breathing, changing organism, rather than feeling betrayed and distrustful of my body for letting me down time and again? If I could learn to cultivate qualities of trust, surrender, and letting go, imagine how freeing that might feel. At age 32, I decided to attend seminary at Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California, to explore these theological questions in greater depth. Through a combination of academic studies of world religion and a healthy dose of life experience, I came to this realization. A life based on fear never leads to freedom and hope and peace. Let me repeat that. A life based on fear never leads to freedom and peace. This is the beauty of embodied meditation and prayer. It invites us to slow down, pause, and inhabit our bodies with deeper grounding and presence. It creates a safe space to trust, surrender, and let go. After a lifetime of struggling to inhabit my body due to trauma and illness, I am now beginning to experience a more holistic, integrated approach towards peace through embodied meditation and prayer. Dr. Tetetsu Uno, a Japanese scholar on the subject of Pure Land Buddhism, expressed it best in these words. He said, "The Cartesian split of body and mind has no place in embodied prayer, for it involves mind, body, and spirit, as well as intellect, emotion, and will. The hands in prayer overcomes the duality inherent in human thinking and language. When the two hands exist separately and work independently of each other, we have the duality of good and evil, right, wrong, pure and impure. But when the two come together and work in harmonious unison, the wholeness of the spirit becomes manifest." So tell me, when was the last time that you felt truly embodied, mindful to the moment, experiencing the sacred in everyday living? How might some of these embodied spiritual practices highlighted above help keep you grounded and present? How might they enable you to trust, surrender, and let go? For anyone who has experienced trauma to the body of any kind, I can truly appreciate and respect how tremendously challenging and scary it is to inhabit one's body. After all, the body is the very source of that pain. Who would want to touch such such a tender wound. However, the body can also serve as a source of healing and wisdom if we can find the courage and tools to access it with greater compassion. Seen from this perspective, perhaps religion is less about a system of belief and more about an embodied posture of faith and trust. My hope is that these humble prayer poses and meditation postures from the world's spiritual traditions can teach us to lead a more embodied way of life. May they be of service to individuals and our society longing for greater healing, wholeness, and peace. I would like to end with a closing prayer by David Adam. God of peace, relax the tensions of my body. Still the anxieties of my mind. Calm the storm of my heart. Give me courage to wait. Let peace flow in me, through me, from me. The deep, deep peace of God. Amen. Shalom. Salam. Namaste.